Good evening, everyone, and welcome to a Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight's guest is Alfred Depew. Alfred travels around the globe as a leadership and relationship systems coach. He works with individuals as well as CEOs and large corporations. He has led creativity and leadership workshops in the U.S. and Canada, and is the author of Wild and Woolly, a Journal Keeper's Handbook. So let's find out more about his work by welcoming him to the show now. Hi, Albert. How are you?
I'm well.
Oh, good. And I can hear you. That's a good sign.
Yeah, there's a bit of an echo.
Is there a bit of an echo?
If you
have your internet turned on to hear, you'll have to turn it
on.
I don't either. Oh, well, let me make sure.
I've actually closed up my computer.
Okay. Let me know if it becomes a problem.
Okay. It sounds like it's gone.
No, now I'm having trouble hearing you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now. All right.
So well, Alfred Depew is ready to go.
All right. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what it is that you do? I know what a coach is, but just assume that I don't know anything, that I'm kind of a dumb cluck, because sometimes I can be. And that you're explaining, you know, your job and what you do to help other people.
Well, what a coach is somebody who establishes a relationship with a client in order to call that client forth and to really help the client reach a clear vision for his or her life and then hold that person accountable to what they're going to do to really reach that vision.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of basically what coaches do. That's sort of the base of the profession.
Uh-huh. How do you train for that, and what kind of background do you have?
And certified through them in 2001, and then a bit more advanced certification through the International Coach Federation, which is our...
I'm sorry about that, guys. Can you hear me?
I can hear you,
okay.
But I
Okay, well,
I
I'm sorry. It seems we're having a problem with Vonage lines. We're always having a problem with Vonage lines, especially
right.
When hard-hitting messages get out there. It seems the Vonage lines at the most opportune times seem to play weirdness with. I just thought I'd let you know. So if it continues, well, you know, you just laugh with the joke.
Okay. Can you put us on the same line?
I can switch Alfred if you'd like.
Yeah, because
we've got lots of lines here.
Yeah, because I'm having trouble hearing him. He's breaking up.
All right, folks, we're going to be right back. We're going to put him on a different company line instead of Vonage. Stick around.
Thanks.
Houston, we have a problem.
State your problem.
Picking up transmission from Mars.
Okay, folks, we had a little technical difficulty with Vonage, which I guess is one of those phone companies that provides services. So the owner has kindly switched the phone line and is calling back our guest, Albert. And let's see if he's back. Albert, are you online?
No. Yes, it's Alfred.
Oh, I mean, Alfred, I'm sorry. But it's quite a night. Is Mercury in retrograde or something?
I don't know. I know it was squaring Pluto a while back, earlier in the week, I think. So there's a lot going on in the astrology, for sure. I'm not an astrologer, but I've been following some of the astrological news recently. And
well, that would be interesting to talk about, too, because it definitely affects everybody on the planet.
It certainly does. And all the other planets as well.
And all the other planets. Well, there you have it. Did you notice that there were solar flares starting to hit the sun now? We're going to be in a very intense solar flare cycle.
I know, and I don't know what that means, but I just think it's so fascinating.
Oh, me too. A lot of my guests do research into the Mayan prophecies in 2012, and it's in all interrelated, of course, because everything is interconnected, but it has something to do with raising the frequency or the energy of our planet. So.
Oh, no, not again. Here we go.
We just did it 13,000 years ago. My God, here it is all rolling around again.
I'm still reeling from the last time.
Yeah, that darned Atlantis, that was such a bummer. Not to mention Lemuria. Whoa, that was a sticky wicket.
I know.
So, we were kind of trying to figure out who you are and what you do, and I gave you a new name. So.
Yeah, who the heck is this guy on the internet radio? Well, I have to say that this is my maiden voyage on internet radio. I'm kind of a veteran of regular radio.
Oh, good.
I'm a regular on another radio station back east that has a little show called Coach's Corner.
Uh-huh.
But this is my first time on internet radio, so it's kind of exciting.
It's fun. It really is. I mean, it's just like talking to an old friend.
Yeah.
You know, and I always learn so much from my guests. I mean, even if I think I know something about the subject that that the guest is proficient in, there's always stuff that gets called out during the conversation, and sometimes some just totally unexpected stuff that, you know, you would never even dream of.
Yes.
And, you know, I hope that's that way for the listeners as well. I'm pretty sure it is, because when I listen to the shows, I have all kinds of synchronicities and so forth. So,
Lance, what is it that you think you know about coaching?
Well, the only thing that I can say that I might know about it is that I did the S training many years ago.
Oh.
And I did their six-day event also, and, of course, that was Werner Erhard's big deal, and I think they called that coaching.
Ah.
So it's basically what it works out to is empowering the individual to take back their responsibility for their lives.
That's pretty much what it is.
Yeah.
And it has become a profession in its own right in the last 10 or 12 years. The man who's sort of credited with coining it in terms of a profession is a man by the name of Thomas Leonard, who unfortunately died a couple of years ago. And he started a school to train coaches called Coach U, which is an online program.
Oh, that's clever.
And some of the people that were early colleagues of his decided to start an in-person training program, and that was the Coaches Training Institute.
Huh.
And what was interesting about that is it was started by a group of former actors.
Oh, interesting.
So there's a lot of improvisational theater kind of work that is part of the training, which was very fun and very lively. And even though probably 95% of the work that I do is over the phone, it was very valuable to have some in-person training as well.
Now, you work, who do you work with primarily? Because I noticed in your bio that you've worked with such groups as the Democratic National Committee, for one.
Uh-huh.
Just to pull that out of the air, Have you ever worked with any of the candidates that are running now?
No.
So do you work with the committee itself?
Well, I was working with a member of leadership. Where that list comes from is I have worked with either the CEOs, the executive directors, the staffs, the team leaders, or the teams.
Okay.
Of many of those organizations. In that case, it was actually a team leader that I was working with.
Now, what are most of these companies looking for? Ways to empower their managers to become more motivated or productive or effective? Or what's the goal with most coaching?
Usually the first, in terms of organizational work, the first thing that an organization wants is better to be more effective. So, yes, it would be great to empower managers and stuff, but the thing that gets their attention is something's not working.
Yeah.
And often it has to do with the relationships.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's where I go in and start, first of all, getting very curious about what is actually happening in the system.
Oh.
And what wants to happen next.
Oh, yeah.
So an awful lot is listening to the relationship system itself, whether it's a couple, a partnership, or a team.
Uh-huh.
So it comes from the belief that there is, as it were, a third entity that gets created in relationship. So that there's you and me, and then there's this thing between us that also has an intelligence and a knowing and a wisdom. And it's a lot about listening for that, learning how to listen for that.
Oh, huh, interesting.
Yeah.
So do you often find that people in the workplace, for instance, are at odds for many reasons, possibly a lack of communication being one of them?
Yeah. Lack of communication is probably the single most presenting thing. Couples will come and say, we want to communicate better, or a department will say, you know, somehow we're just not. Or they don't maybe even experience it as lack of communication, but they come to that pretty quickly in our conversations. So there are a lot of communication skills that they can hone and work with and play around with to really help increase positivity in the system.
Uh-huh. Can anybody enter into this field? Is it something that, given the state of the economy today, there will be a lot of people looking for jobs? Is coaching something that can support you eventually?
Depends who you are. It's sort of like every other profession. I went to massage school back some years ago in the East, and very few people who come out of massage school actually practice massage.
Uh-huh.
Same with art schools and, you know, many, many things. So you will get a lot from the training, for sure. And a lot depends on who you are, if you're capable of having your own business, or if you're working with others. I mean, some coaches are hired by companies and are internal coaches, sort of part of HR or other departments. I know IBM hires people that it calls coaches in their system. So a lot of it depends on who you are, where you're going, how much gumption you've got. And, you know, a lot of people say they want their own business until they have it.
Oh, yeah, I've been down that road.
And there are moments when I look back and I think, ooh, gee, was this really the right idea?
Right.
Because it's an enormous amount of work, as you know, and as any small business person out there knows, too. What interests me about being a small business person is that our economy depends on us.
Mm-hmm.
And I coach a lot of small and family businesses. And the economy is made up more of us than it is of large corporations. Even today.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's a surprise.
I was surprised by that statistic, too. And it looks to all the world like small businesses are gone, and that's not exactly the case. We're in danger of losing our small business.
Right.
Which is an important, an important community builder. The independent bookstore down the street, the grocery store on the corner, the mom and pop around, that's kind of what glues the community together.
Absolutely.
Those relationships. And then, you know, young people, when they come out of school or something, are sometimes wanting to start their own business. So they're looking for cities and towns where that's possible. And so they're bringing their sort of new life and energy and creativity to the places where it's not too expensive, first of all. You know, some of these more expensive cities are really kind of emptying out in terms of the young people and people who would be the economic base in small business. But anyway, that kind of gets away from your question. It's a great profession if you are insatiably curious about other people.
Well, yeah.
So a bit of a journalist might not be bad to have in you.
And you definitely wouldn't want to be completely absorbed with yourself because you have to pay attention to your client.
Yeah. This wouldn't be the... There are other jobs for absorbed people.
Yeah, politics.
Maybe. Or philosophers.
Of course.
Or zany mystics, maybe.
Maybe.
Or certainly writers, painters. I come from a background. I taught for 20 years at the Maine College of Art.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it was. So I, you know, artists are my tribe. Artists.
Oh yeah.
And craftspeople have always been my tribe, and there are different levels of self-absorption in that. It's interesting that you mention that because, of course, a lot of what I do with my clients is try to get them to be a little bit more self-absorbed, or shall we say more self-aware, because the pace of life, especially for our leadership in North America, is so intense that people are not looking inward much. It's costing them and their organizations and a lot.
You find that there are a lot of people who are trying to find some outer solution, you know, a job that will solve their financial problems, and might be ignoring the inner creative urges or impulses?
Maybe, or it may be the other way around. You know, the inner and the outer exist in relationship to one another. And always what we're trying to do is strike a balance. A dialogue.
Right.
Very important to be able to listen to the outer world as keenly as one listens to the inner world.
Right. This is something that I feel for myself, that it's really, you know, it's important for each person to find something that really excites them, that is like their bliss, their joy.
Yes.
And that is something that needs to, that's where you can focus your attention. Now, what happens is that a lot of people say, well, I can't do that because I have to earn a living. Or I hear that over and over. Or, you know, there are other excuses. It sounds like you're more about empowering others to do that.
So, Lance, have you followed your bliss?
Yeah, periodically.
Periodically. And have you had to make a living?
And I've had to make a living, yeah.
Me too. Everyone I know who is living an empowered life, and that's sort of, it's kind of a dated word maybe, but is living a juicy, interesting, yummy, whatever kind of life, is actually doing both.
Yeah.
You know, and it doesn't matter what you're doing for work or what you're doing for your bliss, as long as you have a consciousness about that.
Right.
I remember talking to a woman about, I think she might have actually been a client. I think she was a client. She was talking about being having been a bartender.
Uh-huh.
And she loved it.
Oh, yeah. That's
she loved being a bartender. And, you know, I don't think she was a drunk or anything like that, but she just loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the energy she brought to it.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt she was really working with people almost on a soul level sometimes. By just showing up the way she was showing up at the bar.
Yep.
And it's not one of those things like, oh, you have a career and that's your bliss and that's purpose. And well, it was for her.
Yes, absolutely.
One woman's bliss is another woman's nightmare. I mean, I personally would hate working in a bar. I can't even go in them.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the energy there. I don't like it. But for her, it was completely different. So, yes, we all have to make a living. I have found that always interesting and challenging. The thing is, I love to work. Mm-hmm. I have never really had a job that I didn't like. And I've had some very weird jobs. And the thing was, it wasn't in the job, it was what I brought to it. And
right. Right.
Again, we're back to insatiable curiosity.
Yeah,
I got fascinated by washing dishes in restaurants because I hadn't done it until I had. And
right.
then I'd done it in one, but I hadn't done it in another.
Yeah.
Or, writing copy for an ad agency, or selling books at retail, or massage therapy, or social work, working with the mentally retarded. It was all really pretty fascinating. And none of it paid very well, by the way.
You should have paid them for your edumacation.
Right. But when I started coaching, I told one of our team leaders what I was doing professionally, and there was a pause on the phone, and she said, "Oh," she said, you're really dedicated to scarcity, aren't you?" I said, "Well, what's that supposed to mean?"
That's funny. You mentioned something interesting. As you talked about the bartender and even fulfilling a soul purpose or soul communications at the bar, and I definitely believe that the soul does communicate with others on invisible levels. Do you work with that idea at all, that that there is a soul and that we are that maybe we are here to achieve certain things, and that when we're not working towards our soul purpose, that we're somewhat unhappy or undirected?
Well, here's the question: is it possible not to work towards your soul purpose?
Well, yes, of course.
And so it's an awareness that I bring to my work. It's not language that I use.
Okay.
For any number of reasons, I'm working with very diverse people, and not everybody has the same belief system. And so I have to really respect that. But one of the things I do in my intake sessions is I do ask about people's spiritual practice or what their way of centering themselves.
Uh-huh.
And some people say, it's very interesting, this one guy I was working with said, "I don't have a spiritual practice, I was raised a certain religion and it was awful and I don't ever want to do anything like that ever again." And I said, "Oh, okay, great, well, how do you center yourself?" He says, "Oh," he says, "I'm a fly fisherman." And then he described what he would do as he practiced casting flies after work. And for 3 hours after work, he'd just go to the park and cast flies. And he described this kind of state of peace and equanimity and that he got. And I said, "Well, you know what, Mike? It sounds like you're achieving through casting flies what many people are trying to achieve by sitting on those little silk pillows."
Exactly.
Yeah,
absolutely.
So you could claim that, call it what you will, but it had the same effect.
Yeah. Wow, interesting. And I totally agree with that. It's each person can find their own way to that particular space.
In fact, it's our responsibility, I think.
One question that I brushed into my head while you were talking earlier was, as you're listening, do you find that there's that empathic or intuitive skills come into play, that it helps to have some kind of intuition or empathic ability?
I would say intuition, not empathic.
Okay.
In other words, empathic, in my understanding of the word, as we used to use it in the healing modalities, is you tend to feel what's going on out there in here.
Right, right.
And that is not useful in my profession.
Okay. You have to remain objective.
Right. Because, of course, healers who are empathic healers know how to clear themselves and know how to, take the malady in their body and then get it out, all that stuff. But I'm not working with people's health here.
Right.
And that's a very important distinction. I'm not a health professional. So I'm more like your accountant. But intuition is always extremely important, and we hold it differently. It's not like, "Oh, I'm getting an image." It may actually sound like, "I'm getting this." Oh, okay, I'll give you an example. I was working with a financial advisor, one of my clients in Missouri, and we're talking, and she was leaving a company and starting out on her own, and she was kind of you know, worried and is this the right thing and all that stuff. And we've been working for a while, and I stopped at one point and I said, I'm getting this image of Daniel Boone. And she said, I can't believe you said that. I have this picture of when I was 3 years old. I'm dressed up as Daniel Boone with a toy rifle. I'll send it to you. In other words, there was, who knows where that came from. It was incredible.
Right.
But
right.
that was this sort of image of herself, the pioneer in herself, the part of herself that can really go and do this.
Oh.
And I just kind of stumbled on it. And just as many times, probably more often than not, I will say something like that, and they'll go, no, I don't get any, you know, or who's that? Or you know.
Right, right.
So it's about holding it very lightly as one tool, as one source of information, but not the sole source.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, what about the concept? Now, you work with individuals, too, as well as couples.
I do.
And what about this concept of a soulmate? Do people bring that up in their desire to have coaching? How does that fit into the scheme of things?
Wow. yes, it comes up. It doesn't always come up as a soulmate. I haven't heard that word in a while. It's so beautiful. My favorite story about a soulmate is a friend of mine. This is off topic a little bit, but a friend of mine was going to. We were living in New Mexico, and she went to a psychic. And she went into the psychic and said, "Okay, I've been looking and looking and looking for my soulmate. Where's my soulmate?" And the psychic said, "Your soulmate does not have a body in this lifetime." And so my friend, who's very, you know, deeply involved in spiritual practice, it just like it took the pressure off.
Yeah.
She said, "Oh, oh, is that all?"
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I get it. So this other thing is it doesn't necessarily mean that it's not soul connection, but this whatever it is that we call soulmate doesn't always, we're not always in a body in the same incarnation.
That's
my understanding of that. So
yeah.
To get back to coaching, I guess what I would get curious about is, how do you know you are in the presence of a soul, what you call soulmate?
Uh-huh.
In other words, how will you know when you find one?
Uh-huh.
What are your criteria? Not necessarily for the height, weight, dimensions or something, but how will you know in yourself that you have that connection?
That's
what
right.
is the connection? What is the quality of that connection? What are the words you have to describe that?
Interesting.
Yeah.
And it might not be somebody that you or in the package that you expect it to be in.
Exactly. And it may not be the relationship you think it's going to be.
Exactly.
It may have nothing to do with taking a mortgage out and living in a split level ranch in California.
Yeah, exactly.
It may be somebody who knows. But we have all kinds of assumptions about what relationships are supposed to look like.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
really well. Get in our way a lot.
Oh, absolutely. How does coaching relate to quantum theory?
Well, that's a leap.
Oh, I pulled that one out of a magic hat. I have a black hat here with a rabbit, but I didn't get the rabbit. I got the question instead.
Well, I don't know exactly. I know that many in my profession talk about quantum theory as a context for this work. And I know there is a really wonderful woman by the name of Margaret Wheatley.
Okay.
Wheatley, who is something of a hero in my profession.
Oh.
Who has written a book called Leadership and the New Science.
Okay.
And its subtitle is Discovering Order in a Chaotic World. And she actually was in Vancouver a year or two ago speaking. I didn't get to hear her speak. She was, I think she was brought by the Haven Institute. But I have read her book with awe and wonder. I just think she's so extraordinary because she's kind of pulling together a lot of things that are in the air. And she's worked with many, many different kinds of people and organizations. And one of the things that she says is that relationships are the basic organizing unit of life.
Huh.
And that chaos and change are the only route to transformation. which is sometimes very bad news for an organization. You know, because they really, some organizations are really already feel themselves to be chaotic, and they want order, and so that they want a consultant to come in and impose order.
Right.
Okay, here's the computer system you need. Here's the kind of accounting you do. And what I do as a relationship worker and a coach is go in and get very curious about how do you listen to your relationships? What's the atmosphere when you have this kind of conversation? What's the atmosphere you want to create with each other? How can you take responsibility for that? What are the structures you might want to put in place that would help you have more respectful communication?
Right.
Things like that. And that can feel a little like, well, wait a minute. Where's the solution here? Well, actually, because coaching by its nature as a profession is solution-oriented, and you have to have a coaching plan or else it's really not coaching, it's sort of where the coaching plan comes out of. It's not necessarily here are the problems and here's the solution. It's here's what's going on, and here's how we want it to be. Here's how we want it to be different.
Right.
Here's what we're dreaming about. Here's what it was like when we were a startup company. Here's where we are now. Here's what seems to be trying to happen.
Well, that makes a lot of sense.
But you see, they're different kinds of questions, and
they don't necessarily lead
quickly to structures. They do lead to structures, though. That's the important thing.
Do you ever find yourself in a difficult situation when you're coaching, say, what happens when you, let's say, for instance, I'm guessing this might be a potential difficult situation when somebody who's pretty high up the food chain in a corporation may not agree with your assessment or is at odds with the rest?
It hasn't actually happened to me yet, partly...
Okay.
Because what I do is I get the team to assess itself.
Oh, okay.
Because I don't know a lot of things, I have questions.
Right.
And that's where I'm different from a consultant. Consultants are experts about things.
Right.
And I'm not. And that's good news. Because you don't want me to come in and try to start telling you what to do.
Oh, people hate that.
Well, no, it's not. Some people are really good at that. I'm not.
Yeah.
And that's not coaching.
Yeah.
What I do is I say, okay, how is this team working, team? You tell me. And I actually have, there's an instrument I use to an assessment tool if needed. But I find the best assessment tool is sitting around and saying, so, what's going on?
Right.
Well, here's what's going on. Oh, interesting. Here's what I notice about what's going on in the room right now. How does that land? Does that make any sense? No, I think it's this.
Huh.
Oh, okay, say more about that.
Huh.
Now, having said that, I'm actually working with a team of engineers where the team leader seems to have a different agenda, and there is another agenda coming down from on high, even from higher up.
Wow.
of the whatever you call it, the hierarchy.
Yeah.
So, as I'm listening, I'm thinking, maybe this team isn't going to get to set its own agenda completely. And if that's so, they need to know that. So then what they're designing is how do they want to be with the agenda that is coming down from the managers. So in other words, there may be some new policy and they're coming and this is the new policy. And then how they can design, they can't design the policy so much necessarily, although it's very interesting how information sometimes goes back up the tube. But at this point, it's sort of how do we want to be with the new policy? And that happens all the time in organizations. It's like, oh, my gosh, look what they're doing. They're changing the front desk, and we're handling orders in a different way or something like that. And, okay, how do you want to be with that? Well, first of all, we want to be irritated and vent a lot. Great, be irritated and vent a lot. Important information. Now, how do you want it to be so that it runs more smoothly? Or what is the thing you're trying to do as a team that makes it worthwhile to make this run smoothly? What is your investment here as a team? What does that make sense?
One of the things that you were talking about in your that you mentioned is your books on journal keeping.
Yes.
Is that a literal description of what you're writing about, and is journal keeping a valuable tool?
Well, that actually came from a different part of my life, which actually is an interesting kind of dovetail. But for many years, I have led journal workshops, mostly for artists, but then I kind of branched out and was working with teachers of writing in middle and high schools in the state of Maine, and then social workers and health professionals, all kinds of people. And lots of people would just show up, gardeners and all kinds of people. So I ended up, people kept saying, you need to write a book, and I said, I don't want to write a book, I want to do the workshops. I have a whole shelf full of self-help books, and I never read them. I want to, you know, get out and do the work with people. That's what I found interesting. And I don't know, one thing happened, another thing happened, and I decided to just try it. So I got my typewriter out, and I'd finished a novella that I was working on in New Mexico, and I thought, okay, well, what about a journal book? So I just started typing as though I were teaching a class.
Oh, yeah, good.
And it was very fun. And my rule for that book was it had to be fun to write it.
Yeah.
If it was going to get into some kind of, I don't know, some other energy, I wasn't interested.
Yeah.
So it was pretty fun to write it. It's always fun for me to write the first draft. The revisions can be a little agonizing, but anyway, I got it all sort of together and was showing it to people. Its first concept was as a workbook, but the more I worked with that, you know, and I would have Xerox copies and hand it out to people and say, well, you know, work with this. Does it? What I found is that I myself don't like to write in someone else's book.
Uh-huh.
And that's what it felt like. So it took a different form. It's a covered spiral binding, so you can have it open on your desk and do the exercises in your own journal.
Mm-hmm.
So does that answer your question? Oh, how do people use it? Often I send a copy to individuals I'm working with because they can find it another helpful tool in the coaching process.
Uh-huh.
Some of the exercises that are in that book I sometimes use in relationship coaching. They may not be quite the same form, but I often invite people who are in couples to keep a relationship journal. It just adds another interesting layer to communication.
Uh-huh.
And I've known families who've kept a family journal on the coffee table or something, or in the kitchen, so that every member of the family could make entries.
Oh,
so
nice.
It was a notebook as public forum.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
When you work with couples on the couples level, what do you find is there a common thread in terms of what the problem is between couples?
Well, the common thread is the extraordinary courage and love that people have in their relationships.
Mm.
That's the common thread.
Mm, that's nice. I like that.
Yeah. And that's what I stand in awe of when I'm working with a couple, even if they're breaking up.
Wow.
Often it's they have come to a place where they hire me because they want to be conscious and intentional and as loving as possible, even as the relationship is dissolving.
Oh, wow.
And that, I mean, think about that. That's a lot of courage and a lot of love.
Huh.
And the creativity of relationships. I mean, relationships in and of themselves are generative by their nature. Things happen when people come into relationship. That's the whole point, I think. And so there's an enormous amount of creativity and wisdom that comes out of relationships know more than they think they know about how to communicate, what works, what doesn't, what they want, what they don't want, and what they can do to get what they want. So so often, as with individuals, it's really, let's have a conversation about that. Let's see where that information or that knowing or consciousness is residing, and let's hear it speak, and be curious about that.
Uh-huh. Do you find that people sometimes have breakthroughs when they're being coached?
Oh, yeah. That's the whole point. I mean, I don't mean to be glib, but what I imagine breakthrough is an increased awareness and an idea of what you could be doing differently to sustain that awareness or to act on that awareness. Yeah. What do you mean by the word breakthrough?
Hold on one second here.
Okay. I mean, it sounds like you may have been using the word in a very particular sense.
Ah, there we go. Are you still there?
I am.
Much better. Well, in terms of maybe they were stuck before and then there's like an aha moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a series of aha moments, which when you look at it, all learning is that. When we're learning French, when we're learning algebra, or not learning algebra as the case was with me, but when we're learning anything, it's a series of aha moments or what you call breakthroughs. That's how learning happens. And if you'll remember to learning how to ride a bike or learning French, it's not always very comfortable.
Right.
One of the things I had to keep reminding students at art school is that they weren't there to be comfortable. Learning is, by its nature, uncomfortable.
Uh-huh.
You're moving off the dime.
Right.
You're going from what you know to what you don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's wonderful stuff. As you travel around, what's one of the more memorable experiences you've had while coaching?
Oh, gosh. Oh. I was doing a session with a couple that were appreciating themselves and each other and their relationship, and they were going back and forth, and this was actually on the phone, and this was a sample session, right? And it had come through a business colleague of mine, and I thought, oh my goodness, this is such a, I would love to coach this couple. They're so appreciative of one another, and they're so conscious and intelligent and interesting and well-traveled, and they have this awareness of the challenges, et cetera. And then about, as we were ending the hour, it was probably about 4 minutes before we were scheduled to end, they started to have this huge fight. I didn't know what to do. Well, my goodness, I said, well, do you have a little more time? We could go a little over, because I didn't have another client coming in for a while, and it was hilarious. And for me, as a relationship worker, it was sort of like, so that's there too.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah,
But it really took me off guard, and it took them off guard, on some level, and it was sort of like, oh, well, how do you want to be with that?
Uh-huh. Interesting.
Yeah. But it was memorable to me because I got so kind of scared and freaked out. And, oh, my God, we only have 4 minutes. You don't have time to have a fight.
Really? How dare you?
And so I get sort of attached to the idea of resolution.
Right, right.
Which can be a real hindrance to growth.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot that feels unresolved when we're in a learning process or a change process. So it's important to look at the little pieces of resolution along the way.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that we think it's going to look like this when it's resolved, almost never.
Yeah.
Almost never.
And the other question that came up, I was wondering if you ever ran into a situation where you might start coaching somebody or a couple and feel that they might actually need the services of a different professional.
Oh, absolutely.
Like therapy or medical.
Yeah. And then I refer them.
Okay, good.
Yeah, there are situations that are uncoachable.
Uh-huh.
you know, active drug addiction or alcohol
right.
abuse is uncoachable. Active domestic violence or sort of an unresolvable power differentiation between the two people is, in my view, uncoachable. And or chronic mental illness and depression. Things like that. I was actually working with a guy from Colorado for a while, and he knew it, finally. You know, it's like something wasn't it wasn't happening. Whatever had been working between us in the coaching relationship kind of wasn't happening. And I got curious about that. And he finally said, you know what it is I think I'm chronically depressed and I need to stop coaching and deal with the chronic depression. And I said, wow, that sounds right on. But there's a sense of like an undertow or a something that can mean a couple of things. Often, if I've been working with someone, it can mean that we're finished coaching. And that's cause for celebration.
Yeah, absolutely.
And sometimes it may mean that something else is going on that needs to be addressed in a different way. And that's also cause for celebration. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Were there any coaching situations that you'd prefer not to remember?
You mean where I did a lot of bad coaching? Yeah.
Or maybe it was just a weird situation or something.
Well, yeah, it was often about how I was handling it. And so, you know, I had to learn. And when I was in certification the first time, we would record, we would get permission from the clients to record our sessions and then get them supervised. And hearing a session was just agony. It's sort of like, oh, no, I didn't do that, or oh, I forgot to do that, or oh, this was a missed opportunity. Now, it didn't mean that the client wasn't getting value. But as a young coach, I just could see how the coaching could have been much more powerful. So I'm in a second certification progress for organization and relationship systems through the Center for Right Relationship, and I'm going through the same thing all over again.
Wow!
It's like, oh yes, ooh, ouch, or oh, hey, that sounded good, and let's point to this. So it's I don't know if you've ever seen yourself on video or been supervised in that way, but it can be kind of agony.
Oh yes, it's very confrontive.
Yeah, like who is that guy?
Yeah. Even just listening to myself on the radio show is kind of you know, I generally don't do it.
Yeah.
But I mean, I'm sure that the few times that I have listened to some of my shows, I've definitely learned a lot. I'll be sitting there thinking, oh, God, that's a terrible, terrible moment, you know, and I sound so awkward here, and I could tell where I was nervous, and, you know, you just have to put yourself aside when you're on the air and just, you know, you can't be self-conscious.
What I love about when I'm not coaching very well and my clients are well-trained, they let me know.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah. So because it is about the empowerment of the clients, and they're quite open about what they notice, about what's working and what's not working. And we redesign it in the moment. And actually, that is something I designed with my clients from the get-go. If something's not working, let me know so we can redesign it in the moment and have it be powerful.
Well, it sounds like you're doing a fantastic job. I mean, I'm almost sold to have you coach me, and I have nothing to coach about. So you must be doing something right.
Yeah, I think it's something about, what is it? It's my enthusiasm for this profession and what it gave me as a client. I was never, ever going to be a coach. In fact, I mean, I came from an arts background and writing and all those kinds of things, and some years ago I hired a coach, and partly because I was getting a little burned out as a teacher, and I was beginning to do the kinds of things that I vowed I'd never do, like blaming my students. things like that. Like,
right, right.
So I thought, no, something has to shift, and I knew it wasn't therapy. I'd had a lot of therapy, a really great therapy. Therapy is healing modality. I love it. But this was something else, and I hired a coach, and within 3 months, I got back to who I really was as a teacher.
Right,
and it was
right.
the same curriculum, but I was showing up differently. It made all the difference in the world, and then I thought, oh, my gosh, this is really powerful. So I started training, and I went down to Washington, D.C., because that was the closest training that year. And I was in this room full of people who were not me. You know, they were wearing suits and had attaché cases, and they were lawyers and motivational speakers. I don't know who they were. But I was living in Maine. I have galoshes on. It was January. I thought I was from another planet. And I'm looking around these people, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, I shouldn't be here. This is terrible. This is wrong. It's all, I don't know what. But by Sunday of that first training, I looked around at that same group of people, and I said, I don't know what you guys are doing here, but I'm a coach. It's like I got the essence of what this was, and I could carry it to communities who have nothing to do with corporate boardrooms.
Right, right.
Sixth grade teachers, ministers, rabbis, communities of faith, all kinds of people. So I got excited, and then I just was so excited about what I was doing that people were sort of saying, well, gee, give me a sample session. I need a coach. I said, okay, let's do it. I don't know how to do it. Well, let's just make it up. Okay, we're in. So I continued my training and continued to make it up and got more skills, and my business grew that way until I left teaching in 2003 and moved to full-time coaching, and am still full-time coaching and now live in Vancouver, British Columbia.
Oh, how nice.
Yeah. I immigrated on November 2nd.
Wow, I bet it's beautiful up there.
It is beautiful up here.
Well, you know, Alfred, that we have actually filled up almost a whole hour already.
Wow!
Isn't that amazing?
Look at us!
Well, you know, it goes fast when you're having fun.
Yeah, it does.
And I love your energy. I mean, I can tell that you're just a real good person to talk to. And I'd like to have you mention your website and how people can get in touch with you and so on and so forth.
Actually, I think my website is down for the moment. That's what you mentioned
that's
before.
Right, that's right.
So something either with the servers going funky, but maybe the best way to get in touch with me is to send me an email at adepew@earthlink.net. That's adepew@earthlink.net. And when my website is recovered, excuse me, that's simply alfreddepew.com, alfreddepew.com. And I'd love to hear from you, especially if you are in a relationship and would like a free sample session that's an hour over the phone, or are an individual and would like a coaching session, or are on a small team that would like a free coaching session. So I'd like to offer that to your listeners, and any comments or thoughts that you have. I don't know, do they also blog onto the station? Is that a way that people have of responding?
On the website, on the BBS website,
yep.
If people pull up my show, A Fireside Chat, then I have your bio with their picture so people can see what you look like, and also with your website address. So
great.
If somebody missed the, you know, or loses the piece of paper that Alfred gave over the internet,
okay.
Just pull up my show, and then you've got the bio picture and the website there.
Wonderful.
All
so,
right.
Lance, what was the one question you are not going to get answered this evening?
The one question that I won't get answered?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I don't know. I don't know if I even have one.
Maybe you asked them all.
Let me see. There might be one that I... No, nothing really important. I think...
What about the unimportant one?
Well, the only other thing I had was about martial arts.
Ah. Well, I think... Are we done?
I think we're just at the end.
Okay. So, anyway...
So we'll have to pick it up again.
That sounds like a great idea. I'd love to come back.
All right. Thanks
well, thank
a lot,
you,
Alfred. I really appreciate you coming on, and it's been a wonderful hour with you.
Oh, thanks so much.
Terrific. And thank you, audience and listeners, and it was fun being with you. This was a Fireside Chat. And good night, Alfred, and good night, everybody else.